Hi everyone, Emily here. I'm so excited to talk about our partnership with DeskCrits. DeskCrits is truly the insider's guide to the ARE. Made by two young architects who recently passed their exams, the book breaks down all six exams into topic outlines and reading lists with specific pages to study from outside resources. For me, the hardest part of the ARE was figuring out what to study. I've used DeskCrits personally as a study guide for my last four exams and couldn't recommend it enough. It's easy to follow, graphically pleasing, which is very important to us design people, and it's very thorough, not vague at all. My personal favorite are the DeskCrits study sheets that cover objectives of each test in a super manageable way. The sheets only cover key topics, so you don't have to worry about sifting through any excess fluff. If you're interested, go to DeskCrits.com and use code OPP15 for 15% off. Happy studying!
Hey everyone!
Hey everyone, I'm Emily.
And I'm Maria, and this is the Open Plan Podcast. We're excited to have you here.
Join us in navigating life and architecture as young professionals tackling career, education, social lives, and everything in between.
Keep up with us on Instagram at Open Plan Podcast. So now let's get into it. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Open Plan Podcast.
Hi everyone, we're so excited to have you back.
Yeah, so today we're just going to jump right into it. We have a great interview with Caitlin Brady. We talked a lot about being, you know, a young architect, especially, after getting your license and being in that weird mid-career point where you kind of know what you're doing, but you're not at the executive level or anything like that. So we are really excited about this interview, and Caitlin's a great person to just listen to and learn more about.
Yeah, we're so excited to talk to her. And she's also a fellow Philly gal, which we love. Went to Drexel around the same time I was at Temple. So we're so glad we had her on. I'm going to read her bio now so you guys can hear more about her. Caitlin Brady is a project architect and associate at Ayer St. Gross, specializing in higher education architecture. With 10 plus years of experience, she's become a champion for diversity and inclusion in the profession as an ACE mentor, volunteer on local AIA committees, and host/producer of Architect Ed, a biweekly podcast that amplifies the voices of women working in AEC industries. In 2023, Caitlin was awarded the AIDC Emerging Architect Award.
Yeah, so her podcast is a great resource as well. She interviews a lot of women in the industry, and we actually went on her podcast as well. So if that episode's not out yet, it will soon. And we'll put all the links below and in the episode description so you can check her episode out and her podcast. And it's just a really inspiring space to be. And I'm so glad that we got connected, both fellow podcasters and young women in the industry. And yeah, this was a great conversation. We can't wait to get into it.
Yep. So without further ado, let's get into the interview. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Open Plan Podcast. Maria and I are joined by Caitlin Brady from the Architect Et podcast. We are so excited to have her in the studio today. So welcome, Caitlin.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
So excited to have you. So we already read Caitlin's bio in the intro, so you were kind of already heard on paper, Caitlin, but today we're going to dive into everything related to career, how Caitlin got to where she is now, lots of licensure talk. So yeah, we're excited to get into it. It's kind of funny because apparently Caitlin and I are both from Philly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's awesome. I grew up right outside of Philadelphia and then I went to Drexel. So I lived in Philadelphia for like 7 or more years. I loved it.
Oh, cool. I went to Temple. I wonder, we might have talked about this. We might have overlapped during undergrad at some point. That's awesome.
That's crazy. And only now you're like crossing paths.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And now you're working in DC, right?
Yes. So it was kind of a long journey to get here. So like I said, I grew up outside of Philadelphia. I went to Drexel. I did their 2+4 Bachelor of Architecture program. So if folks aren't familiar with that, it's basically like regular architecture school for 2 years. And then for the remaining 4 years, it switches to night classes. So, and then the goal is that you are working and getting real life experience in an architecture firm during the day. So I had a job with a 401k, the whole thing. I had to apply for that. It wasn't like an internship. And then after work, I had the pleasure of going right to like a 3 or 4 hour studio class a couple nights a week. And I also took other courses. So I think at times I had like 3 other classes outside of working full time. And then doing, you know, some social things. Not many, but some.
Yeah. We had when I started working, we had a few Drexel co-ops. And I always was like, so much respect because they're like students, but handling a full-time job. And they would have to run to class, like you said, after. So I was like, in some ways, I was like, this is such a good experience because they're literally getting – you know, kind of like a step ahead of everyone when they enter. And a lot of them would line up. Like, I don't know if, did you work at that job after graduating? Like sometimes people would stay at the same place after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my first job was at Jacobs. So I worked there for a few years and then I ended up switching jobs still within that 4 years. And I worked at another firm called Metcalf. And so when I graduated, I went to work Monday, Tuesday, or I think I went to work on Monday. I took Tuesday as a PTO day for my graduation, did the whole ceremony, family came into town, pictures, all of that. And then Wednesday, I went back to work.
Oh so my gosh.
It was just that you just kind of went right back into it. Now you had your degree, but you're still working at that job. Wow. So yeah, it really prepared me for the workforce because I was literally in the workforce and it was great to go to have all of like my plumbing and HVAC and code and professional practice classes. And then also I was seeing that in real life, how it actually applied to a firm setting. So it really made that information kind of stick in my head because I was applying it as soon as I was learning it.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I don't think we've ever really talked about that format of education and architecture. We've talked about a lot of the different ones, most common ones, but that's a really different way to go about it. And I think it's really good if you're really sure about the fact that like you want to do architecture, you want to be licensed, you want to do that, and you're already kind of establishing a relationship with these firms. That seems like a really interesting way to go about it, and very efficient too, because then you're already like making money and gaining experience, AXP hours, all that stuff. By the time you graduate, you're halfway there.
You're a young professional already. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it cuts out the master's degree, I guess, you need, right? Because so you could kind of do your 4+2 and then immediately start taking your exams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the program was, I think it's a NAB accreditation, or it was NAB accredited. So I was able to just get my exam or sit for my exams right after graduation. I pretty much had all of my hours completed by the time I graduated. So I made it a goal of within a year, I want to get my license. So I graduated in June. I started testing in November, and then I was licensed by June of the following year.
Wow.
So you kept your promise to yourself.
It was – I definitely crammed – I think the last 4 in like a month and a half at the end.
Like, oh, no, so, I'm running out of time. Oh yeah.
Yeah, I would double study and then I would schedule one. And then if I passed it, I would schedule the next one for the following week. And I did that for about a month and a half. So it was a little crazy at the end. But wow. I was like, I made this promise to myself and I want to get them out of the way. So I did that.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth it if you're pushing to – cram it in. It's just like dive in and just commit.
Yeah. A lot of times elongating it makes it way worse anyways, and you forget content. So sometimes you just need to like, schedule the test and like be like, all right, I'm just going to do it. Was that with the 6 exams when you were taking it, or was it still 7?
It was the ARE 5.0s.
So you're still in the 6. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Great. Yeah. You know, I think we kind of covered a little bit about your background, and you went to Drexel and kind of immediately got into the workforce that way and prioritized licensure. Can you tell us a little bit about your current role and what you're doing now?
Yeah. So after I got my license, I was in Philadelphia for a bit. Then I lived in San Francisco and I worked there for a bit. And then as of this past July, I live and I work in DC now. So my partner and I in 2022, we decided with the whole pandemic and remote work, we did a year of the like digital nomad thing. And so I was hired on at my current firm, Air St. Gross, which is based in DC and Baltimore. We also have a Tempe, Arizona office. I was hired as a remote employee. So I was able to travel and work at our clients are all over the country. So I was on a lot of Zoom calls anyway, working with folks out of Nashville or Philadelphia, or now a lot more in the DC area. But I was able to travel and work for them, and it was a really fun experience. But now we're based in DC, so things have settled down a little bit more, and we work mostly on higher education projects.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, that's pretty unique, I think, like, especially in architecture, to get a remote role. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe not in 2020 so much, but still, like, that's really, really cool that you were able to do that. Because you hear about digital nomads, and it's like, it's definitely not architecture, right?
We're like finally catching up to the rest of the industries.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So where, when you were remote, were you in, what different cities did you hit? Or were you mostly in San Francisco, or how would that go?
Yeah, we were some in San Francisco. We basically did a month or more in different cities. So we would book like a long-term Airbnb or another company called Blueground. And we tried out Denver, Chicago. We were in Philly. We went to the Jersey Shore. We were staying with some family in different places too. We tried DC a couple different times because we wanted to test out different neighborhoods. Because we weren't familiar with DC, we didn't know what areas we wanted to be in terms of like density or amenities. Mm-hmm. So we tried the east side of the city. We tried the west side. Then we liked the west side, so we tried it again. So that's kind of – we were all over the place.
That's so neat. So do you – now that you've kind of seen both sides of the coin, do you prefer the remote life versus going in? What are like kind of the – you know, I'm sure there's some things you miss about it. But or like, you know, I guess seeing both sides, do you prefer one over the other? Or what's your takeaway, I guess?
I love the adventure of traveling and seeing new places, but I am more of a community-oriented person. I love kind of having a group that I can tap into and just feeling connected to my base and my home. So I like the flexibility of remote work where I don't have to be in the office every single day. I do go in when we have events or if I'm coordinating with my team, but the flexibility is nice that like if I feel terrible one day, I can work from home. Or if I have a lot to do and it's really just focus work, I can just immediately wake up, brush my teeth, get something to eat, and then I'm at the computer and I have like a solid block of focus time for the whole day. Mm-hmm. I can just get through that drawing set or red lines or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But so kind of there's perks of each. I think for me, the digital nomad, like I would never like live in a van and travel around because I think that's not really my personality of what I would like to do, especially while working. But I do love having the flexibility of my partner's family is in the San Francisco Bay Area. So we can go visit them at the holidays, but I can still work. And I'm not like taking a whole big chunk of PTO time to go do that. I have the flexibility of maintaining my job and staying committed and connected to my teams. But I physically don't have to be in DC for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I found that like now the sweet spot is definitely like 3-4 days going in where you're like still connected to people, but you still have the flexibility of like, oh no, today I can't talk to anyone. I need to just heads down, you know, focus, silence. Or if you're not feeling 100%, you have that time, which is nice. I think that's like ideally what most firms should be doing. Mm-hmm. I've heard of firms that have like required people back 100% of the time, and a lot of the employees are just like not cool with that anymore. but yeah, sometimes architecture is a little bit behind, as we know.
Yeah. But I haven't heard of it too many times, which I'm kind of surprised by, that like people have kind of continued the 2 to 3 days in Philly, I've noticed. And it's even like, I think like more like government focused jobs are trying to go back 5 days, but like architecture firms are kind of like, even the principals are like, we love it. We love the remote. We're not trying to go back 5 days. Yeah. Like we're here to embrace it. So it's just so fascinating what the pandemic has done culturally to architecture. Yeah. And there was just such a mental block, like we couldn't possibly do that. Like, no, not us. Like, but you know, it just goes to show that, yep, we could be flexible too. So I think it's awesome for the new generation and what they're looking for too. So awesome. So you kind of touched on that you work on higher education. Can you tell us your title and what your day-to-day kind of looks like?
Sure. So I am a project architect. I'm also an associate. So I guess it's kind of like a dual title at my firm. And my day-to-day really changes depending on what project I'm working on. But right now, the project that I am the PA for, which is project architect, is in design development. So we actually have our deadline in about a week and a half. So my days are very busy. A lot of coordination with our consultants, the structural engineers, the mechanical engineering, plumbing. We have acoustic consultants, a whole series of other consultants as well that I'm kind of managing a lot of the communication with alongside my project manager. And we're making sure that the design of our building is captured in our documents. So I'm also heading up a lot of the Revit work for that and just building in 3D, documenting also in Revit too of kind of we have modeled it, but then I'm also making sure that all of the elements are detailed properly. And then if I'm finding holes, I'm going to the consultants and saying, we need to coordinate where your ductwork is going with our RCPs. We need to make sure that our structural beams are supporting this strange, you know, roof condition that we have. And our building is that I'm working on right now is actually collegiate Gothic, which is not something that I have worked on in the past. Usually I'm doing more kind of modern contemporary buildings. So a lot of the detailing is, it's really fun to learn about, but it's also like, oh my gosh, I'm detailing so many elements of the building that normally you just do like your head jam sill for your window and that works for most windows. But now I'm like, I have cast stone and wow. You know, interesting profiles and working with kind of how is all of that supported structurally because it's a lot heavier than like a insulated metal panel that
pulling out some Gothic era detail books.
Yeah.
Like, how do they used to do it?
We don't learn this stuff in school. Like it's not even in the AREs really.
There's like a new standard, I guess. New, yeah. So that's really cool.
Yeah. So it's I feel like with each project I'm always learning about the specific details, whether I'm working on like a lab and they're doing the scientific experiments in a really unique way. And it's like, oh, I've never built a lab just for robots or, you know, things like that. Each project brings a lot of like learning opportunities. And I think as my career has progressed, I've learned that you really just need to know how to ask the right questions and pull the right team members in because no way are you going to retain all of that information for every single project, unless you only worked on the same type of project forever, over and over. But that's, I've kind of been a big organizer and coordinator of this project, and that's what I'm doing. And then we'll transition into CDs, which are construction documents, and that'll take me through the summer. We'll submit for permit, and then I'll be working on CA for the project.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, so I think maybe going, let's go back a little bit to when you got licensed, because I think that's a lot of like where our audience is, where we're going through that process. Since you did work a little bit before you got licensed and then graduated and got licensed within that year, can you tell us a little bit more about how your responsibilities changed, if they did, if you were, you know, promoted or treated in any different way within the firm once you got licensed as a young woman as well? just tell us a little bit about that transition.
Yeah, I had been thinking about this because I saw the question in advance. And going back to that time, I remember taking my exams and my firm was kind of like, oh, yeah, like very cool. You know, oh, where were you this morning? Oh, taking an ARE. Okay, well, I guess we saw the PTO was on the calendar. Like it wasn't a very big deal at my firm. And when I got my license, I remember I was so excited. And then they're kind of like, oh, great. Yeah, good job. And that was really it. I remember I had been helping to run our blog on our website. So I typed up the like, we are pleased to announce that Caitlin has gotten her license.
Oh my gosh. You're like, fine, I will pat myself on the back.
Exactly. I was like, okay, I did a great job. Good job to me, you know.
I deserve this blog post.
Yeah, because I had written them for other people at the firm too. So then I was like, will anyone write one for me? And they're like, well, yeah, you can do it. You do the all the others. I was like, okay. Caitlin studied very hard. So I think too, sometimes we think that, oh, you get your license and then like it's like a magic wand and then all of a sudden you are elevated to this high level. And I think more realistically is that the firm is using your skills and expertise in a certain role. And unless someone else is coming in to take that role, oftentimes they're like, well, you know, congrats on your license, but we need you to still fulfill what you're doing right now. And we're still billing, you know, on all your current projects at your current billing rate. So there's not a lot of flexibility in terms of like an immediate move when you do get that license. And I knew that at my firm that kind of, it was very top heavy. There was a lot of people that, you know, had been there a long time, were really ingrained in the firm culture. It was a smaller firm. We only had about 15 people. So I didn't see that there was a lot of opportunity for me to quickly ascend to leadership there. I knew I would be working in my role until maybe some people retired, which I think they're still working there even right now. So it was probably good that
I'm not going to wait for that.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, I probably will have to look outside just to get that next career jump. I had lived in Philadelphia for a long time, and I'm sure you know that it's kind of a small community, mm-hmm. and a lot of people know each other. I had known a lot of people at other firms in the city, and I really felt like to grow, I would want to try out another city. So I did while I was taking all my AREs, I was doing a lot of research about the markets in other cities and the job opportunities, and San Francisco kind of ended up being this. It was far enough outside my comfort zone, and there's a lot of job opportunities, and the salaries were pretty good, and it looked like a beautiful place to live. So I did some research and applied for jobs there, and I was applying as – I remember changing my resumes like through the application process of like pending – you know, it was like I don't have my – okay, I submitted my paperwork, but like it's pending. And I was able to get hired as an architect out there. Nice. And I think that was when – and because I was new to those firms too, I think there's a lot of onboarding where I wasn't managing my own projects immediately, but mm-hmm. I was kind of the secondhand person to helping projects and like learning a lot about that and kind of grew in responsibility from there. But again, if you have to be a squeaky wheel, you have to ask for responsibilities. What I'm finding in my current firm, I had talked during my last performance review of like, you know, this is where I want to see my career go. This is kind of where I want to be. And my manager is like, oh yeah, like we probably need to get you on some better projects then. Because I think often at larger firms, it's these showpiece projects which really elevate your career because then, mm-hmm. you know, they're winning awards and you're talking at conferences about them and you're bringing in more clients because these are such like astonishing projects. It's strategic too. Like you really have to talk with your manager of this is where I see myself and I want to make sure that I'm staffed on projects that are helping me get there. And of course you have to do the more mundane stuff, but mm-hmm. if you're being that squeaky wheel and telling your manager like I want to keep progressing, I want to keep working towards, you know, this next level of my career, that's what you have to do.
I mean, this is kind of touching on something else that we wanted to talk about, like it's very often that people switch jobs when they get licensed. And I think yeah. it's part of what you were saying. Like if you're already hired to do a position, it doesn't matter if you did your license in, you know, 6 months or a year, even it's too fast, right? for them to be like, oh great, you were going to be a project architect now. Like, and they're not going to hire someone else to take your previous position. So I think, especially in a firm like 15 people, even like medium-sized firms to small, it's probably very difficult to make that transition. With your transition too, it's like when you're already applying, even though you got your license like yesterday, whatever it was, if you're already applying for jobs licensed and you're putting yourself out there as a, like a candidate to be a project architect, people might see you in a different way than the people at your firm. Right? Like that mm-hmm. hired you as a architectural designer, intern, whatever it was. So yeah, I think that's kind of like covering that as well. Of like, how do you assert yourself and be a squeaky wheel and like tell people what you want and what your goals are and saying like, hey, once I'm licensed, I want to do this and this and that. Or like, this is why I'm doing my license so fast because I want to become a project architect, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's still really hard for us, like especially young women. It's like we're always kind of seen as less than and like not responsible enough.
So I think the situation you're in where you're in a smaller firm, I've heard that a lot where there's no exact like, you know, guidebook to what happens when someone becomes licensed. It's kind of up to whoever is managing you. Like, no, you know, we only have like 4 people on this project, so you're going to stay on this. And then I've heard frustration from people that, you know, even though I am licensed, I've noticed my responsibilities haven't changed. I didn't even get a salary bump, things like that, that I kind of was thinking about when I was taking my exams. And I'm granted in a part of a much, much larger firm. So I knew they had the capacity to kind of get that promotion started early. So even when I was, two exams away, I was like, listen, I'm going to get an exam. I mean, I'm going to get an exam. I'm going to get licensed by this summer. What can I do to get my promotion like sooner rather than later to project architect? And I kind of had a good relationship with my manager to plant that seed. And she was like, oh yeah, totally. Like, let me like start that paperwork essentially. And I think it really depends on the firm, as we mentioned, but I think having kind of an expectation of what happens to me after I get licensed is so important, that a lot of people are so ahead in the game. Like, I just got to study for these exams and it's just going to happen for me. But really, it's like, you should know the answer to when I do get licensed, what happens. So at least, and it's motivating too. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to finish these two exams. And then I get a salary bump, and I know I get a salary bump. And I think it's very intimidating to ask that question. But in the end, it's like your manager, I mean, hopefully if you're a good manager, is understanding and is like, yes, you should be rewarded. And it's not their money they're giving you, it's the company's money. So it's just kind of taking the personal part of it out and just being like, I've worked so hard for these six exams and there should be some type of, you know, pot at the end of the rainbow type thing. So, and then for some people, you know, if you can't get it at your firm, I think it totally makes sense to switch and start over with a new title. And sometimes it just has to be like that. But yeah, so I'm glad you touched on that, because I think that's something I didn't even think about until the end of my licensure career. Like, wait, you're studying so hard, but what actually happens? So
yeah. Exactly. And they're not trying to, like, it's not personal. Yeah. You know, they're running a business. And if they could just hand out money willy-nilly, I'm sure that maybe they wouldn't. But it would be nice if they did, right? Bonuses at the end of the year, raises every year. But sometimes they're like, listen, like, I can only budget for where you are right now. And that's great that you got your license. But then it's you have to have that open relationship with your manager. And I think a place where you can see yourself grow and prosper is a place where you have that a good relationship with your manager, where you can talk about these things, like what are the opportunities, what are the possibilities, and then they can respond to you. When there's like opacity in terms of what is the future, that's where it's like, okay, maybe you switch firms because you're not quite sure of where you'll end up. So it's better to move someplace where you have that relationship and you can move forward with someone and work with them to advance your career. They're invested in you.
Right. And just kind of keeping that communication open and just giving them a heads up, because in the end, they can't read your mind. Like, I expect this when I get, you know, licenses like that. And then just giving them some time to digest that it's coming, I think is really helpful too for like future proposals, things like that. Just kind of getting you geared up for that.
I think talking about it during the process, like early before you're done. Also, hopefully, if you have a good relationship, it will make them like more invested in the process, and then in turn, maybe more appreciative when you're done. It was like, oh my gosh, like I was there when you were studying. I was, you know, I know how stressed you were, how busy you were studying and working at the same time. So congrats. Like, maybe there's more recognition if they are more involved in the process. Although we always have talked about
not telling anyone,
not telling a lot of people when you're taking your exams. So I mean, maybe you tell them that you're studying and have to tell them the date.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
So they don't ask.
Sometime this month I'll be taking it. Yeah. Keep it vague.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So, we kind of touched on how your, you know, responsibilities changed as you became licensed, and, you know, from describing your job right now, you know, you do a lot of coordination, you're doing, you know, juggling a lot of pieces as project architect. Have you faced specific challenges in your career so far? Is there one you could pinpoint? And if so, how did you overcome that?
Yeah, I think Maria touched on it a little bit earlier of just being perceived as a young woman in a male-dominated industry. I think my one tip that I always say is take your graduation date off of your resume. Just put focus on work experience. I know that can be controversial, but it has that's typically worked idea. For me.
That's true. There's no rule that you have to have that.
They can ask, but exactly.
And if they ask too, I mean, you're not really, you don't need to tell them specifically. But what I have faced in my career is because I had 4 years of work experience, a lot of employers have wanted to discount that as internship. And it's like, actually, I went out and I applied for jobs and I, you know, signed on and I had healthcare, 401k. Like, it was a real job. And I reported there 5 days a week, 40 plus hours. So to just say that was an intern, they wanted to kind of reduce my hours, because I think a lot of jobs are offered and they're like, what are your years of experience? They go to that AIA salary calculator, right? And then they offer you money based off of years of experience. So they want to kind of – what I have seen is like, they're like, oh, those 4 years when you're working in school don't count. So you have even less. And it's like, no, I disagree. So what I like to do is I just take my graduation date off. And that gives me – I mean, I have the experience. So I'm not being deceitful or lying, but then people don't go, oh, you graduated in this year. You must be this age, especially because I did a six-year program. So that makes me seem even younger.
That does blur the lines. Yeah.
So they assume, oh, gosh, you're this age. Well, you know, we would never give that type of leadership.
Going to the AI calculator and doing a drop down with that exact, like, let's
not. Can't pay this much to a 28-year-old.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's like, well, I have the experience and I feel like I can take that on. I just want the opportunity to do that. And I think that people not knowing your age gives you opportunities because they make assumptions and whatever, and they think you're a little bit older. And I've been able to take responsibilities on that way. I was running a project when I was in San Francisco where I had probably – it was like a CD set we were pushing towards. I had 10 people working under me. We were kind of coordinating all of the documents. And one of the managers at the firm was like, oh, you know, we're chatting about someone else. And she's like, oh, you remember when you were her age, blah, blah, blah. And in my mind, I was like, that was last year. I am 1 year older than her.
Oh, my God.
And she just – I don't know how old she thought I was, but I was like, yeah, I do remember – because that was last year.
You're like, I'm just going to keep that to myself. But yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's – it's definitely a challenge where I constantly feel like I am like the youngest person in the room, or maybe I shouldn't take on this type of responsibility, but you don't know until you take it on. I think oftentimes women have to prove that they can do the work before they're offered that position, where men sometimes are like, oh, we'll give you the position, then you can prove that you can do the work. So it's a lot of like – proving myself in the industry. And I think that age has kind of been a detriment sometimes. But when you find a great manager who believes in you and sees your talents and wants to work with you and give you those opportunities, that's when you really see your career take off, because you're working with someone who believes in you and you can trust them, ask them for advice. And that when you're aligned with someone, it's kind of that like protege type of relationship. Yeah. That is like the best case scenario if you can find that.
Yeah. I definitely had that experience in school a lot, where like professors would take that role of like a mentor, and would, I feel like in school almost they respect you more and like care about your ideas more, because it doesn't really matter and you're just a student. But then as soon as you graduate, you're like, you're garbage. Like, you don't know anything. Yeah. I've had that too, where they don't count experience during school as experience, which is... I also disagree. I don't know if it's a generational thing where like internships back in the day were less than they are now, but I also got some very, very valid experience. I worked part-time during school and stuff, and Emily has as well. And I think also there's something weird happening with like when you go to grad school, where especially Emily worked between undergrad and grad. I didn't really, I worked, but only for the summer. But like, they almost forget about your undergrad graduation day. And they're like, oh, you graduated, like we graduated grad school in 2020. So they're like, oh, you're just a baby. Like,
yeah, 22. Yeah.
Like,
I'm like, no, worked 6 years between.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I love the idea of taking that date off, because honestly, that makes me self-conscious sometimes when I have that grad school degree, when it's like not that, you know, not that long ago. But it's like, yeah, no, I was working fully as an architecture designer, but then I needed to get my license, so I went back for a master's. Like, that's why I went back. And it could be almost seen as like an MBA for people who go back to school older. And it's like, for some reason, there's a connotation with like an MBA or like a certain certificate program that doesn't read as so young. But for architecture, it's like they're just assuming all schooling is the same. And but I think that's kind of a hot tip. I like that.
Yeah. They're also not like trying to fill in all the gaps. Cause if there's dates on everything, you're like, okay, so like, was there any time that you weren't doing anything? Why?
Yeah, exactly. And why? Yeah. And it's almost like, I wonder if you just take off, like, you know, when you're working part-time or doing the co-op, like, do you still call yourself an intern or do you just call yourself an architectural designer during those like years of experience? Because if you're there for longer than a summer or, you know, like I just, you know, if you're doing the work of literally someone who's an architectural designer sitting right next to you, what's to say that you need to call yourself an intern during that? So.
Oh yeah. I mean, I was an architectural designer. That was my job title. So I put that. And then the co-op is actually, so I know you're probably familiar with the Drexel co-ops. Architecture didn't have the co-op. So that is a lot of our other programs, architectural engineers. I actually think the interior designers do a co-op program. So I think if you do that, just put, you know, co-op on your
Like parentheses resume. Co-op or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you're hired as a full-time employee or even architectural designer, but part-time employee, I would just put that. And then if you're a summer intern, definitely put that as your, you know, don't like change the title of what you're doing. But yeah, just in my case, I was like a full-time employee, got raises, all that. So I put that.
Yeah, nice. That's a good tip.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like a kind of a theme that kind of leads to our next question is, you know, just having a really good relationship with your manager and, you know, the best you can. Like, of course, everyone's going to have different personalities. Not every manager is going to be your best friend, but depending where you are, just keeping that communication flowing. How do you think that relates to you advocating for yourself? Because I've noticed you've kind of, you know, been putting in some good, helpful tidbits of how you've been advocating for yourself. But yeah, that leads to our next question. So.
Yeah, I guess it comes back to being a squeaky wheel. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to have an idea of where you want to go. I don't think it's realistic to know where you want to end up in 15, 20 years. But if there's something that's like the next rung on the ladder of, so I'm a project architect right now. I don't know if I want to specifically be a project manager solely. I do love the design. We all love design, right? But that's something where I want to get more experience. So I've communicated to my manager of like, listen, these are my responsibilities now. I don't, you know, I want to do more of the paperwork side of things and the contracts and scheduling and leading a team that way. How can I start to dip my toe into that? And again, like I've said, it's not something that happens instantaneously. So you have to communicate that over time of when there's an opportunity, when a project comes up, please think of me for this, or I like working on business development. If, you know, what pursuits can I help on? What client relationships can I start to form? And really it's just whatever next steps you see and you want to get experience in those areas, ask for that and then try it out. And if you don't like it, go, okay, I actually want to go back to where I was and that,
but you now know,
I
don't
see myself. Yeah. Yeah, but now you know. So it's about, you have to do introspection, be reflective of kind of what are your strengths? What are your interests? What tasks? Every day that, like, what do you do and you hate? And what do you do that you like? And then understand where that would take you in this profession. There's a lot of different ways you can specialize, whether it's you could just be an architect doing drawings, being very technical, or doing design or marketing, business development, code. You could just kind of work on, I guess, I mean, there's many different areas to specialize in, many different types of building types. So you have to have an idea of where you want to be and make sure you're working at a firm that has those opportunities. And then again, like I said, have a great relationship with your manager and really kind of communicate where you want to go and do that. And sometimes you'll get those experiences in the office, but I think also being involved outside of the office in professional organizations, you meet a lot of people that you can learn from. You also learn a lot of skills, whether you're planning and coordinating, reaching out to firms. When I was in Philly, I was a part of the AIAS at Drexel and then also the Philadelphia Emerging Architects. And I got to know a lot of firms in the city just because we were constantly reaching out to people through events. And I learned a lot about the job opportunities out there, which firms were great, which ones not so great. And you kind of build that knowledge and community. So I think it's a lot about just understanding where you want to go, making sure you're communicating that with someone who has the power to help you. And then also building up your career, your skill set, both in office and out of office.
Yeah. Preach. Yeah, no, that's good. I think like a lot of the positive like opportunities that I've gotten were through a lot of doing that, like having people mm-hmm. that advocate for you, people that believe in you, and like making people know what you want and what you're looking for. So
yeah,
that is fundamental. You have mm-hmm. to talk to people. Ask for what you want, you're not going to get it. No one's going to yeah. give it to you.
No one's going to know. Or they're just going to keep you in bathroom schedule world or whatever, door schedule world. It was up to them if you're quiet well, enough.
If you do a great job, if you are like the best bathroom scheduler, you know, the door schedule person.
There's
if you
nothing do great wrong work. With that. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, you could be taken advantage of. That's all.
Yeah. You'll just stay in that world. I mean, I've met people who are like, I just do stairs. Every building, I do the stairs. Every building, I do the toilet core.
To each their and own.
If that's what they like, excellent. There's no, like, if you get really good at something and you want to focus in that, go for
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But if you want any type of like advancement or growth of opportunities, you have to communicate that.
So you are also a fellow architecture podcast host. Mm-hmm. And you have a full-time job and obviously a personal life. So what are some habits or tips or strategies that you have to kind of manage your time and stay kind of on top of everything that you're trying to accomplish?
Well, this goes back to Drexel. I feel like I'm talking about it a lot. But where
Drexel sponsor
I,
us after
that. I know, yeah. Drexel.
All the students yeah. are convinced
Drexel
by Caitlin.
Drexel Westfall. Yeah. Exactly. Enrollment open now.
It's a sudden spike after people see this podcast.
Yeah. I know. They could just take some tuition off of my – no. But basically when I was working full time and taking night classes at, you know, 5 or 6 PM, I would have to transition because it's like, okay, whatever I'm working on, I need to put it down because I have to bike across the city to get to my night class. Mm-hmm. And it really taught me a lot about, you know, I'm very dedicated to my work. I'm very dedicated to my schooling, but I have to put it down at a certain point because I have to focus on the other thing. And so I was able to carry that after graduation when I was studying for my AREs. It was like, okay, I'm done work for the day, or, you know, you have to work overtime sometimes in architecture, but I think it's a balance of like, how much do you work and when do you put your foot down of like, I can't do any more and still be productive. I need to get some sleep or I need to eat food and then maybe I can come back early tomorrow or come back later. But working until you're at like 4% battery internally is you're not doing good work at that point anyway. Mm-hmm. So it taught me a lot about time management and also that other things, I need to do other things to fill my life, especially during the pandemic. It was that kind of mental health walk or just getting out of the house is really important when you're working from home, moving your body. And the days where I don't do that, the days where I focus solely on work of like, I get up and I'm immediately at my computer and I'm working through lunch and I'm working late, I feel absolutely terrible at the end of the day and I don't have a next – like the next day isn't good because I'm depleted.
Snowballs. Yeah.
Exactly. And so sometimes I get in that habit and I'm not going to say that I'm perfect and I definitely work on it, but I know that I have to be proactive in terms of doing things for myself to make sure that I can keep going and keep performing and doing good work, especially during those work days that I've contractually agreed to be working on things. So – yeah, it's really just identifying what kind of lights me up, activities I'm involved in. I do intramural sports. I do improv. I have the podcast. I like to work out and go for walks and explore DC. So I always try to sprinkle that into my day, whether I have to get up a little bit early so I can get out for a walk in the morning and then commit to work for the full day. I'm working on taking lunch breaks, but that's kind of – I need to take it.
I love to do it. It's life-changing. It only took me like 6 years to discover that, but yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I go through phases.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, especially work from home, you can actually cook your meal for lunch. Yes. Whereas
like, that has spoiled me. I'm like, I'm going to, you know, make myself an omelet or something fancy.
Watch a little episode of something. Yeah.
Hang out with your dog or like, And, you know, I love that you said that, you know, in the end, employers are banking or even budgeting for you to take those breaks. So you are owed yourself breaks and, you know, take your lunch break if you can, you know, I understand deadlines, but I'm really, really trying to normalize that lunch break because I, like you said, when I am just at my desk for 8 hours straight, by the end of it, it's just that burnout feeling that, you know, whether at your work or school, like that familiar feeling where you're like, oh no, like I'm going to crash. It's only Monday. But really sprinkling in, you know, whether it be at lunch or like kind of like the early morning thing you had noted, like it just makes such a difference in productivity, especially for people out there, you know, who are also studying after work. And it's just, we're not meant to sit this much as humans. And, you know, you're going to hurt your back Monday, like way too early in life. So, you know, get up and move. And, you know, even if it's a quick lunch walk, you know, if it's like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, just that boost of like sunlight or like serotonin. Sometimes I'll just stand outside.
Same.
Stare at the
sun. Especially now where it's like it's been winter and then now it's like getting sunnier. I'll just go out and like sit in the sun. And yes. I've seen other people do it too, so I don't feel so bad.
I think everyone's sharing these tips like, oh, serotonin. Yeah. Or like, oh, yeah. Vitamin D. Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, have you heard of the sun? You should see it more.
It's great. Yeah.
There's like research apparently first thing in the morning, like going outside and, you know, having a dog sometimes helps with that. But that just boost of vitamin D just trickles throughout the rest of your day. I think that's awesome. And, you know, in the end, you're just a better architect if you bring all these experiences that you're talking about to the table. So that's awesome.
Yeah. You have to recharge. I feel like sometimes I have a problem at like 5:30 at the end of the day. And I'm like, oh, I can't figure it out. It's taking forever. And I go, you know what? If I solve this tomorrow at 9 a.m., it's going to be like 20 minutes.
No one's looking at this also. At, like if I submit it between 7 p.m. and 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Yeah. But like the problem is an hour long at the end of the day. But in the morning, you're like, oh, here's the solution. Like it's so much easier.
Yeah. So much clearer. Yeah.
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 Awesome. Well, cool. That's all the questions we had, I think.
No,
so.
I had one more question.
Oh, sorry.
To wrap
we balance each other out. It's fine.
Yeah, we're running out of time because, spoiler alert, we're also going on her podcast. But yeah, so in your podcast, you interview a lot of inspiring women, and there's just so much volume of knowledge and advice that you're getting from these women. If you can summarize, what's your biggest takeaway from your interview so far and your experience during the podcast?
That is a big question. I interview women all across the spectrum. So a lot of them have started in architecture and then have kind of, you know, they're in typical practice or they're firm leaders or they have adopted a specialty, whether they're planners or lab specialists or they're working in PR. I have also interviewed engineers and urban planners and urban anthropologists and just kind of a whole gamut. But I think what I have learned from all of them, all of those people in different specialties, is really just, and I think this is kind of why I started the podcast too. It's just, I don't want people to feel discouraged. Oftentimes architecture is very much like a cool kids crowd of you look a certain way, you behave a certain way, you design a certain way, and that means that you belong. But I think that there's so many more diverse perspectives that can lend a hand to architecture, and oftentimes we don't see them. So I just want the podcast to show, and I think a lot of the women in their stories tell that their unique skill sets and their unique experiences and their backgrounds have really allowed them to be successful. And when they lean into those skills and they stop trying to be like everyone else, like we're not all wearing black turtlenecks and the circle glasses and all of that, although I have all of those things.
We do. Yeah.
And sometimes I pull them out. But I think to also just lean into who you are and what you like and where your skills lie and then build a career off of that, that'll make you truly successful. That'll make you feel fulfilled and excited about your work. And sometimes that path to get there isn't always clear, but there is a path. And you just have to work long enough and hard enough to kind of to adopt that. So that's kind of, I know it's not like a specific lesson, but kind of as a conglomerate, everything that I've heard, it just shows that people really can lean in and be successful where they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that too. An architect doesn't look a certain way or act a certain way.
Yeah, and it's like better for it, right? Like we, in architecture, in design itself, like we want different perspectives. We want new things. We want innovation. And it's not going to happen if all the architects are the same, you know, or trying to be the same person. So it's really important. And I think it's important, especially for young women too, to see that, to see that there's not one type of woman architect either. And that there's so many ways to get there. And even if you start in architecture, like you said, people are taking completely different paths. And I love talking about that too, of just like, you might start in architecture, but you can just follow your interests and your passion and find your spot within this world, which is so broad. Like, you could do so many things with this degree. And I love that you're like highlighting examples of that and putting them in the forefront. So great job with the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that's what we have for today. Thank you so much for coming on. This is really inspiring. I'm like very hyped up now.
I know. Nothing like three architects in a room, just, you know, helping each other up.
Exactly.
You could do anything. Yes, thank you so much for having us. I mean, I'm sorry, what? Thank you so much for coming on. Guys, daylight savings has really gotten to me. We were just talking about this. So glad you came on. And can you let everyone know where they can find you?
Sure. So the podcast is called The Architect at Podcast. Ooh. Maybe I'll have to reset. Daylight savings. My goodness. Okay. It's called The Architect at Podcast. And so you can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon. I think it might be on like the Google one as well. But it's all on all platforms. You can also follow us on Instagram. So it's at Architect at, that's Architect ETTE. That's also our website, architectet.com. You can join our newsletter. And then you can also follow us on LinkedIn. So we have a page there and we post all sorts of cool, you know, social media things in addition to the podcasts, which are typically audio.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Caitlin. And bye to everyone else listening. Bye, and catch you for the next one.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.